In our second segment, Erica Harrell recalls her close encounter with seemingly abandoned tires and with the law. She calls the story of capture and escape her tire-tastrophe.
Why, you ask, did we think it would be a good idea to steal old tires from the back of a bowling alley? That is a question I still don't quite know the answer to. It was my junior year of high school, and I was bowling with some friends at Lake Forest Lanes. Lake Forest Lanes is the kind of place that has one of those claw machines you can never actually win anything from. The kind of place that becomes a mecca for high school students when everything else is closed. The kind of place that offers to put nacho cheese on it, no matter what it was you ordered. I hate nacho cheese. I should have taken this as a bad omen. At any rate, my friends and I decided to spend a particularly slow Friday night at L Squared. Or is 2L more mathematically correct? It was a pretty standard night of bowling. We all rented shoes. Somebody forgot to bring a pair of socks, because somebody always forgets to bring a pair of socks. I was laughed at for ordering a pair of kiddie shoes with Velcro straps rather than laces because my midget feet are too small to fit into adult-sized bowling shoes. And the game began. We bowled till we bored, but when we had finished, we weren't ready to go home yet, so we stalled by driving around the parking lot in circles. As our circles became larger and more misshapen, we found ourselves discovering more and more of the area surrounding Lake Forest. And then we saw it, the treasure trove behind the alley. A mound of old, used tires, seemingly ownerless and begging to be rescued from the depths of disuse. At this point, I think it's important to mention the fact that I was the only girl in our group, and that I was the one who had driven. At any rate, the boys were ecstatic. There were a wealth of things we could do with old tires. Rebelliously leave them on our friends' front lawns as a late-night courtesy, analogous to a mint on one's pillow at a swank hotel. Roll them down that one really big hill by Salt Creek Beach and then run back uphill and do it again. Make an obstacle course for painful and intense mock military training. The possibilities were endless, and I was at once persuaded to pop the trunk and let the boys start loading her up. My friend Butter had the first tire halfway in when the police got there. I stood dumbfounded as the cops explained that because I had been sitting in the driver's seat, I would be held responsible. My mind was racing. For what? Grand Theft Tire? Is there such a thing? Good cop politely asked the boys to have a seat on the curb, while bad cop grunted something about my license, and I opened my wallet only to discover that it was not, in fact, there. I then realized that I had used my license to buy a parking permit at school earlier that week, and must have forgotten to return it to its residence within my pleather billfold. The cops asked if I had any other form of identification, and I quickly brandished my Disneyland pass, the only card in my wallet that had both my name and picture on it. Bad cop clipped my Disneyland pass to his utility belt and started talking and waving his arms around, but I couldn't understand a word of what he was saying because all I could think about was how ridiculous my annual pass to the happiest place on earth looked hanging from his belt. He may as well have been wearing Mickey Mouse ears or licking one of those big, vibrant Mickey Mouse head lollipops. Well, when I was directed to sit on the front of my car with my hands on the hood in plain sight, I re-entered reality. And the waterworks started, because, let's face it, I'm emotional. Suffice it to say, then, that this encounter with the police was nothing short of scarring for me. As I sat on the hood of my car, eyes leaking black, mascara-colored tears down my face and neck, I started frantically envisioning my bleak future post-tire-tastrophe. I began to sweat profusely. I felt like a rabid raccoon held captive. I was first asked, "What exactly were you going to do with the tires?" To which I replied, "Just roll them down a hill? Or leave them on people's lawns? Or something?" I then wondered if the plan had sounded that ridiculous when Butter proposed it earlier. Bad cop responded with an unreassuring, "I see." So naturally, I had to come back with, "Will this go on my permanent record? I've never been arrested. Please, officer, you don't understand. I have to get into a good college. I get really good grades." I then asked myself if I had actually just said that, and I heard the words, "We're going to have to call your parents," echoing around me in slow motion. I wanted to scream, "I have a Disneyland pass, for Christ's sake. I'm not a criminal. Can't you just let me go unscathed?" But I instead continued to cry, as I was already locked into disaster mode. Well, the parents were called, but But I guess all's well that ends well, and our escapades ended about as well as we could have hoped for them to. Exhibit Tire was returned to the heap, my pass was restored to me, and my friends and I were released without being fingerprinted, cuffed, ticketed, or fined. As I drove home a mascara-stained mess, I vowed to never again steal tires and to continue to preach my story in hopes that my newfound wisdom would prevent future teens from ever attempting to do so.
Erica came into our studio and we had a conversation about her story. I began the interview by asking her about her connection to Stanford.
I'm a sophomore. I'm potentially going to be an English major with an emphasis on creative writing. I'm involved in FaceAids, ASSU Sophomore Cabinet. More recently, I joined the Stanford Film Society, and I'm a member of Pi Beta Phi.
Was this your most traumatizing experience of getting caught?
Probably. I mean, I guess the most traumatizing just because I haven't really, you know, done anything that would warrant, like, I don't know, a more traumatizing experience if I had been caught by the cops, you know, besides, like, breaking into the old chemistry building at Stanford, which I'm sure everyone almost at least has done at some point.
Really? Everyone?
Yeah. I know a lot of people who've done it, and I know someone who actually got arrested for doing it. I don't know. It's kind of, you know, it's like haunted or whatever. Not actually, but it's just kind of creepy in there. There's a lot of writing on the walls, and it's all dark and dingy. I don't know. That kind of thing. People are always in there, like, ready to jump out and scare you when you're walking through the halls, which is fun, too, but... When I went, that happened to me and my friends, which was kind of fun. I mean, yeah, I guess it was particularly traumatizing because, I mean, my parents have such, like, this perception of me that is just, like, you know, their little girl. And, like, the fact that they were called and that this was right after, or maybe right as we were about to start hearing back from colleges. So that was totally on my mind at the time, and that's why when the cops started talking about, you know, how I would be held responsible, like, this guy was really scary. He was huge, 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 not nice at all. The type of person that it's not easy to make smile. So, yeah, he was really freaking me out. And, I mean, I'm sure, like, today when I think back on it that it was all talk, you know. But I was just really scared because I'd never really had, like, such an extreme run-in with the law. But, I mean, I also thought afterwards, like, I was so angry about it because it was just so ridiculous. Like, they were very clearly, like, old used tires that someone had dumped in the back, like, next to the dumpster. I mean, I feel like that's not necessarily, like, I don't know, that doesn't warrant, like, oh, you know, you could potentially be arrested for theft, blah, 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 you know. But, yeah, so, I mean, I guess that's why it was pretty traumatizing for me. Also, I'm a very emotional person, and I think that's also something that comes into play in my style of writing and the whole exaggeration bit, because I love drama. I love the drama. I love to bring out drama and stories. You know, I'm really good at kind of making situations seem, you know, worse or crazier than they actually were in a way, just, you know, based on the way that I describe them.
How did your parents react to this close encounter with the law?
Actually, they were a lot better about it than I thought they were going to be. My dad kind of laughed it off because he was really crazy. When I'm back home, at least, and here a little bit, I'm kind of like one of the guys. In a way, I hang out with a lot of boys. And they love doing crazy things like this for whatever reason. And I mean, I guess it's just fun, you know, to feel like you're doing something dangerous or that you could get caught for, you could get in trouble for, you know, like, I'm sure, like, everyone has experienced that at some point where, you know, you almost kind of want to do something more because it seems like, I don't know, there's the, like, potential for getting caught. But I guess, yeah, just kind of for, like, the thrill. It was exhilarating, you know. and we were really ready to go use those tires. Also, where I live in high school, it was a huge thing to, like, you know, leave random things on people's lawns. Like, we would cone people all the time, like, sign people. You know, you grab those construction signs and signs from, like, people running for office and, like, stick a bunch of them in one person's lawn. Just do craziness like that. So I guess it's kind of like it was also a pretty typical thing that we did, like, fairly often anyway.
What inspired you to submit this story?
When I read the prompt about close calls and getting caught, this was the first thing that came to mind for me, just because it was so ridiculous and random, not really the typical, like, getting caught story. Quite jarring for me at the time. So I guess, I don't know, it's kind of stuck in my memory.
Amy, let's transition and let's talk a little bit more about your life here. Can you talk about what creative writing classes you've taken while you've been at Stanford?
I took creative nonfiction last quarter, and it was probably the best class I've taken at Stanford so far. I really loved it, and I just think it's just really fun to write about things you know, but, you know, kind of give them an edge based on your perspective. I don't know. I do enjoy it a lot, though. And I feel like people enjoy reading my stories that are memoirs more, too, just because it makes it, I don't know, they're almost more funny because they're true stories, or more, I don't know, they hit closer to home and they're just more, like, richer because they're real, like they actually happened.
What drew you to memoir specifically, and how do you see writing memoirs in relation to, say, fiction?
With memoir, I feel more comfortable using, like, my own voice. I don't know. It's different than fiction. I mean, fiction, obviously, you write from, like, the author uses their voice. But from memoir, I write it as I think it. So I guess, like, I do craft the words, but it's just kind of, you know, my thoughts on paper in a way. And, like, I just have, you know, kind of a quirky sense of humor. So, but I'm a huge fan of exaggeration, and I think that's also, like, one thing that kind of distinguishes my stories, because, I mean, obviously a lot of things are exaggerated, but people still appreciate, you know, the emotion that I'm trying to demonstrate in them. And, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, it's fun, you know, it's fun to exaggerate. All in high school, I did a lot of acting. I was actually in a school of the arts. I've had a lot of experience with drama, and I love it. I haven't really done as much at Stanford as I would have liked, but my two passions are, like, theater and writing. And I have a lot of friends who are also really interested in going into kind of, like, the film and television industry. And so I kind of got, like, you know, screenwriting, like, fever from them.
Could you tell us a little bit about Face AIDS?
It's a student-run organization founded by Stanford students to kind of just raise awareness and fundraise for the AIDS pandemic, specifically in Africa and rural Rwanda. So I guess mostly on the Stanford campus, our chief mechanism for fundraising is pin sales. So we sell these little white pins with the red AIDS ribbon on them. They're beaded pins. I don't know if you've seen them around campus at all, but yeah, so we sell those, and we just have a lot of events on campus to raise awareness, mostly tabling, and, you know, we try to get involved with other organizations, and obviously, like, we work very closely with Stanford Dance Marathon, because all of the money that we fundraise goes to Partners in Health, and Partners in Health then uses the money that we've raised for rural Rwanda, like, health, like, clinics and, you know, whatever they need, basically. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's the same same beneficiary that Dance Marathon has. So, I mean, we share that in common, so it just makes sense that we should work together on that.
Thanks for coming in today, Erica. Erica Harrell is a sophomore at Stanford.